Good morning. Yeah, it's a great pleasure to talk here, especially the honor of giving the last talk. So I'd like to discuss here how to extend the soft gluon resummation techniques that are very well developed for E plus E minus processes, also for Trillian production, to the case of pair production of massive particles in hadronic collisions. These massive particles are also colored. And so the additional issues that appear here is that near thresholds, these colored particles also interact strongly via the Coulomb interaction. So there's an additional set of enhanced terms that should be summed. It's even formally dominant. Then there is the issue, which is also familiar from 2-to-2 light processes, that there's maybe a non-trivial color structure due to four colored particles involved in the basic process. And then due to the Coulomb effect, there is an extra issue that you actually have to worry about when dealing with soft gluons with next to Eichner terms, things that would technically be called power-like corrections in the soft approximation. And I'll discuss those. And at the very end, I'll show you some results of this approach for the inclusive top quark production cross-section. And I should say that this is work I started with Pietro Falgari, my former PhD student now in Utrecht, and Christian Schwinn some years ago. And then there are some other papers with Michael Chacon and Vitov, where we computed the threshold expansion of the TT bar cross section at NNLO. And we are currently working and close to finishing the next to leading log resummation for TT bar production, where I'm showing you some results in the end. And we greatly benefited from work of Thomas and Matthias on Trillian resummation with soft collinear effective theory methods, and also their result on the two-loop anomalous dimension came just at the right time for us so that we could use it. So let me start with the introduction part. What we are interested in is a process like this. Two partons colliding, producing two heavy particles, might be in arbitrary color representations. For simplicity of writing, I will put M1 equal to M2 in the following, but this really doesn't make any difference, but we will deal with the different colors. And the kinematics I'm assuming is such that this variable, this is the partonic center of mass energy, this will be assumed to be small. This is threshold kinematics. And because of this kinematics, it immediately implies that everything else that goes into the final state must be soft stuff, because the energy that's available for this stuff is then only of order m times beta squared. And this may come from anywhere. Now, the hadronic cross-section is, of course, the sum over the partonic channels convoluted with the parton densities. And so more explicitly, you might write this as an integral from 0 up to some maximal value of this variable and insert the Jacobian. Then you get an integral over the parton luminosity expressed as a function of beta times the partonic cross-section. And so beta max is, of course, just this expression with the partonic center of mass energy replaced by the hadronic one. And so beta is forced to be small if you are near the hadronic threshold. So the particles have to be really massive, which isn't really the case for most of the interesting stuff at LHC. So in practice, we are actually dealing with an integral over beta where this beta max is in fact close to 1. Yeah. For top quarks, for instance, it's 0.9 something. And so of course, there's an issue here as to the relevance of this entire thing, because you're constructing an approximation which is good for small beta. And I'll come back to this issue in a minute.
sigma is always a total cross section with all the phase space integration.
Yes,
not considering differential.
I'm always working with a total cross section. Maybe if I have time, I'll say some words on other approaches which go for the invariant mass distribution first, let's say, and then integrate. So when you look at a partonic cross section in this kinematic limit, then it's a standard fixed order perturbative expansion would look like this. There's a bond piece which, due to phase space, is proportional to beta. And then relative to this, you can write down the corrections. And so then you find double logarithmic terms in beta, but you also find a 1 over beta term. When you go to the next order, you find 2 more logarithms, so up to 4. Then you find the product of 2 logarithms with a 1 over beta and also a 1 over beta squared. And this continues with more and more singular terms in higher orders. You get 1 over beta per order and 2 logarithms and then all kinds of combinations. And when we talk about resummation, then the goal is to reorganize this expansion into something which converges under the assumption of small coupling and small beta. So you have to reorganize it so that corrections are of order alpha strong or beta, which means that you would like to write it schematically in this way. You need to sum up all the 1 over beta terms to all orders. And then you would like to collect the logarithms, sum them up as well. So you anticipate that these logarithms have an exponentiated structure. And so you write them in this way, familiar from E plus E minus or Trajan, in the exponent etc. And then what multiplies this resummed expression should have a well organized expansion. So the leading term would be 1. In the next order you would have to have a power of alpha strong or beta. And then in the next order you can have 2 powers of alpha mixed or 2 powers of beta and so on. And when we talk about counting leading logarithmic, next to leading logarithmic, and so on, then we have in mind a counting which is like this, that you count alpha strong times a log as 1. So that's why you have to collect them into functions here in the exponent. But in addition, we also count alpha s over beta as 1. So this is a bit strange because it mixes up what you would normally call logs and power suppressed effects. So logs are like powers. This makes things more complicated. But I guess it's the only useful way to really organize this in the simultaneous presence of these terms and the logarithms. And so this term here is clearly a leading log term. This one conventionally leading log. This one is next to leading log. This one is next to leading log, always in the exponent, and so on. And then this one here is leading log and next to leading log. This is sort of the issue because of the double log structure that you add here. The next term only when you have the first 2 functions, the double log and the next one.
Factor alpha s over beta is order 1.
Yeah, so that's its leading.
Exponent is order 1 over alpha. So why are you counting this prefactor as next to leading log?
And
the first term in the exponent has log beta, which is like 1 over alpha.
Yes.
So it's like 1 over alpha, while the prefactor is only.
You mean this one? Yeah, but this prefactor is like 1. So this you have to sum already at leading log. Of course, at next leading log, you don't have to change anything here, but you do have to have it at leading log, because it's alpha s over beta.
It's in a term, the exponent is larger than order one, right?
So sure, sure, but you need to, if it's in the exponents, sir. You have to get the multiplicative factor correct at order one. Yeah. So you need to sum this.
But for instance, the second term in the exponent, why do you call it next to the union law?
The second term of the exponent is of the same order as this prefactor, so why then? I think one should just start with next to leading log in a sense. Or if you can say leading log is misses terms of order one.
Okay, yes. Okay, now I see what you mean. Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, that any reasonable approximation should be next to leading log, if that's what you mean. Yeah, so this then would be next to leading log, and so on. So, a brief word about where this enhancement comes from. So, the logarithms, as of course well known, very much the same as what we heard yesterday. Soft divisions from the initial state lines with the massless lines with energy of order m beta squared causes double log terms. Emission from the final states, because they are massive, of course there's only single logs, no collinear logs. So, for these kind of logarithms, there is a well-established technique how to resum them for processes like this, which is Dreyian-like, virtual photon, WZ, Higgs, and the feature here is it's a color singlet final state. And of course, if you have a point-like particle here, there are no Coulomb terms in this case. And the techniques to resum those were developed a long time ago, 87 or so, by Sturman, Catani, and then many others. And it's usually based on diagrammatic factorization, actually not directly for the amplitude, but performing certain moments of the amplitudes, you can say a Mellin transform, and then after doing the resummation for the transformed amplitudes, one performs an inverse transform to go back to the actual cross section. And so the work I mentioned here by Thomas and Matthias and Xu, they accomplished this resummation using the soft collinear effective theory techniques directly, sort of in momentum space, and it's, as far as the results are concerned, equivalent to the order approach. Now, the other enhancement, 1 over beta, is also a very old story, maybe not so familiar to this audience, but anyway, a simple issue. You look at a diagram like this, gluon exchange here. And even without calculation, it's easy to see that you should get a 1 over beta enhancement from this diagram. Let's just check this. So let's look at the loop momentum region where the energy is of order n beta squared, so same energy as the soft gluons here. But the three momentum is larger. It's n times beta. And so if you write down the Feynman integral for this amplitude, you convince yourselves that there's no suppression from the numerator factors here, and then the propagator is something like k squared plus 2 k dot p1, k squared minus 2 k dot p2. So let's count this. K squared is dominated by k vector squared, so this gives us a 1 over beta squared. K dot p1, so p1 in the rest train has basically only a zero component, so this gives k0 here, which is beta squared, as is this one, so we get 1 over beta squared, 1 over beta squared here. Now, this enhancement happens only in a certain volume of loop momentum space, which is given by this. So k0 volume is beta squared, and then we have three components of k vectors, so this gives beta cubed, and so you see that the whole thing scales like alpha s over beta, and that's the diagrammatic origin of the Coulomb enhancement. And for this case as well, there are well-known old methods to sum these things to all orders. One can show that these enhancements only occur in these ladder diagrams. And then also in 87, I think, Fadin and Kosel for E plus E minus to heavy particles showed how to sum these things, essentially by solving the Schrödinger equation. We might come back to this. And then later, Strassler, Peskin showed how to include convections, and then this formally developed even further. Yes, yes, but let's say for this particular issue, yeah, correct. So in E plus E minus production, that's even older. Yeah. So again, this technique is basically well developed for the case when, again, the final state is a color singlet and there is no radiation from the initial state. And in this case, there is only these 1 over beta things and no double logs, so nothing from soft gluon emission. And here in the problem at hand, we have to bring these two things together somehow. And so that's basically the content of this talk, what issues arise here and how one addresses them. So what are the issues? So you want to resum these things simultaneously. So the question is first whether this can be done when you have this mixture of all these terms, like this one, which is an interference of Coulomb and soft emission. And whether
I'm a bit confused, but why for E plus E minus you cannot have also soft radiation from the initial state?
Oh, that would be photons, but we're talking about
QCD. Okay, yeah. Fine. So you could pose the problem theoretically. But
you could, yeah. So the question of simultaneous resummation is essentially a question of factorization, because if you can somehow factorize the soft and gluon effects, then it's clear that you can do this simultaneously. So this is the issue here. And why is this non-trivial? Imagine you have a process like this, a diagram like this, and then you take a soft gluon from here, and it connects here, or it might even connect to the Coulomb gluon itself via the three gluon vertex. And now the energy here is the same as the energy of this gluon here. So these things here get, all these energies here are the same. Also this quark energy is the same after you subtract the rest mass. So all these energies are the same. So it's not a priori clear that you can rearrange the propagators in the usual way, that you can move these soft gluons away from, let's say, a collinear line as you would normally do and collect them into a Wilson line factor. So that's why it's a priori not obvious that this works. The second issue is somewhat similar to, let's say, diejet production. There is the question is how color organizes itself. Is it complicated or is it simple? And so if you look at this for diejet production, or also others did this, let's say, for superparticle production with heavy particles at the one loop anomalous dimension level here, then for instance you can find in the literature results like when you look at let's say gluino production, or for massless case gluon production in gluon collisions, then the anomalous dimension matrix at one loop order is an 8x8 matrix. And of course you can diagonalize it, and you find that it's diagonal in color structures which look like this. You have 4 color indices, so you can write down various combinations of Kronecker's and other stuff. For instance, the D group symbols, and you get 8 F like this, which look complicated. And you ask yourself, at least it was clear to me, why are there exactly 8 color structures here? Was it clear to me? And what about the spaces? What singles out the spaces in which the anomalous dimension is diagonal? And is this only just the one loop diagonalization, or is there something deeper behind it that generalizes to higher orders? And connected with this is then the question, when you want to do NNL resummation, you need the two loop soft anomalous dimension here, which at the time was not known, so we want the two-loop generalization of these 8x8 matrices. Whether it depends on the loop order?
Group.
It depends on the channel. So here you have an octet and an octet going into octet and octet. For this case it's 8-dimensional. Oh, you mean whether it's SU3 or?
SON, right.
Okay, I think it would even. Let me think for a moment. Yeah, it would depend on the number of colors as well, and you will see why. Yeah. I think one could work it out, but it wouldn't fit naturally into what I'm saying. Then let me explain why this issue of next to Eichner soft correction arises here. So if you look at the counting, then you could have at one loop a Coulomb exchange, and then in the next loop you could have a soft emission from the initial state, which gives this. But now you can allow yourself an extra factor of beta here, and this would be alpha s squared log squared beta, which is a next to leading log term in the usual counting. So if you want to do next to leading log resummation, you have to address these next to Eichner terms in the soft approximation to get all these terms right.
I missed why you inserted that extra beta.
Because if I didn't, there would be a 1 over beta, fine.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is that if you look at this counting here, so you want to go to next to leading log, then you can afford the 1 here. And then these alpha squared log squared beta terms are generated also by this G2. So in the normal language of soft gluon resummation, G2 in the exponent is responsible for these terms. And so if you want to have the same accuracy in the presence of Coulomb, you have to control all other terms that have this form. And then it can arise through a cancellation of this 1 over beta with the power suppressed soft coupling. So now I'm going to sketch how one addresses this issue, but before doing this I would like to show you preview of the results so that we can see what we get in the end. Just as a reminder, I'd like to show the result for Trallian production of a Trallian object with mass m. In this case, there would be a hard coefficient that produces this object, and then a soft function which depends on the variable 1 over z, where in Trallian production, z is m squared over s hat, and what one has to resum is actually logs of 1 minus z in Trallian. So 1 minus z, if you make the correspondence, 1 minus z is like beta squared for heavy particle production. So this is the result for Trallian, and the resummation happens in here. And the ways to do this is either diagrammatically, or in the soft collinear EFT approach, you would write down renormalization group equations for these functions. And by evolving either this one down or this one up, you would sum the logarithms that originate from this scale hierarchy. So the corresponding result for pair production, despite these complications that I mentioned, is actually not so different. And it looks like this. There's a sum over color, and literally speaking, but I will not come back to this very much, spin channels. For every channel, there is a hot function. Then one has to sum over color representations. And then instead of just having a soft function, there is an object that collects the Coulomb enhancements. And so there is an extra Coulomb function, which is simply convoluted with a soft function. And that is it. So from the point of view of the structure, there are only two additions here. Or maybe I should say that this form immediately tells you that there is some kind of factorization between Coulomb and soft. And the only non-trivial issue that remains from this complication, which I mentioned that the energies are all the same here, is that there is a convolution in this energy, because this heavy quark knows how much energy is transferred to it via these soft gluons, because it's of the same order. But that's all the rest factorizes, and so you get this convolution. And the second thing that you see here is that color is essentially trivial. There are no matrices here. It's a sum over single functions for every color channel. And the third thing that you see here, actually you don't see it, but it's implied in this structure. These soft functions are somewhat similar to the Trallian soft functions. There are no. This is for no. This is for what we are talking.
Yeah.
So for E plus E minus, there wouldn't be a soft function, and for Trallian there wouldn't be a Coulomb function. And so here we have this convolution, and the simplicity of this structure also follows from the fact that we can show that these next two Eichner terms don't exist; they vanish for the total cross-section, and I hope to be able to explain this too, maybe.
Can one understand why the color sum is factorizing that nicely?
You mean here?
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the points I want to explain if I come to it down in the list, second after factorization. But before I go to these things, I would like to mention once again, okay, this is an interesting theoretical problem, maybe. Is it, however, relevant to collider physics? That's not so obvious because of this integral here. Of course, you can construct situations where this would be relevant and the particle is really heavy and close to the hadronic kinematic threshold, but in that case, the cross sections are so small that they are not interesting in practice. So we are always, for practical purposes, in a situation where this integral extends way beyond the threshold region. So why do you do it? And so I think here it's a little bit of experience and guesswork, in the sense that when one does it for Trallian or Higgs production, you can just check a posteriori that by including these terms, it's not such a bad approximation. Okay, you can check this after you have the exact result. And when you learned this message several times, then you are maybe encouraged to do it here until someone like Thomas or T.T. Barr comes along and tells us the exact NNLO result. But if you look at this for top, and I take this integrand here. So what I plot here is d sigma hadronic by d beta, and I plot this for gluon to T.T. Barr at the LHC. And unfortunately, I made this plot for 14 TV, but I guess it should be similar for 7. And so here is beta. And then when you plot this as a function of beta, then it looks like this. Let's see. Oops. Yeah, so maybe beta max is close to 1. So the integral of this is just the hadronic cross section in that channel, because this is already weighted with the gluon luminosity and all the Jacobian factors. And so this peak here is at about 0.5. And now you do this at NLO, where you know the exact result. And I include at NLO all the singular terms. and I also include the constant, but I drop the O beta terms. Then you get the following. See, so of course for small beta, it must be a very good approximation. Okay, it's a bit worse here. And it must go to zero here, because there's where the parton luminosity drops to zero. So it has to go down. So it looks roughly like this. And in this case, you're quite lucky, because you have to have a good approximation here. And here you're lucky, because these two pieces cancel each other. Yeah, so it doesn't always look this good. So we have to keep in mind that what we're doing here is just a guess. Yeah, and it can fail or not, but here you should be doing well. Yeah. And I mean, I always have, if this curve is not totally crazy and you're up here, yeah, so what else can these curves do than go to zero? Yeah, so it cannot be totally bad. But one has to keep in mind that there is an assumption here, but I think I'm quite confident to say that it's better than doing nothing. Yeah. I'm not saying that you get 90% of the exact result always. It sometimes happens, but maybe you get 50%, and that's already better than just not using this information. So,
if you did not include this 1 over beta?
Then it depends very much on the channel. If you take, for instance, it depends on whether the channel is a color singlet or a color octet, because the Coulomb terms are much more important in the color singlet channel than in the color octet channel. So then it also depends on the collider, which channel, QQ bar, gluon, gluon is more important. but you would, if for the color singlet channel, where the 1 over betas are pretty strong, you would get the wrong approximation down here.
Color singlet and color octet channel, is the sign of the Coulomb corrections opposite?
Opposite, yeah. The octet is repulsive with strength -1/6, and the singlet is attractive with strength 4/3. Yeah. That's a big difference. And essentially for the octet, the Coulomb is almost never important. Yeah. The gluon-gluon is about, I think it's about half-half singlet and octet. Okay.
Why are you claiming that your curve, okay, I understand that for small beta, sure, you have your sum, but why are you claiming that your curve above 0.5, including 1 over beta resummed, is better than?
Above 0.5?
About
0.5, I'm not claiming anything. Yeah. I'm just saying
we better than doing nothing.
Oh, it's in the sense that if you have a good, okay, this better than nothing was meant for the entire integral, yeah, and the rest was saying maybe a bit. If you have a good approximation until you don't have to go to zero, if the function is not totally crazy, then both curves have to go down here. Okay, that's just a pure guess. It can be totally off, yeah, but it happens. For instance, for this case,
do some kind of matching.
Yeah, if I had it, but of course we are going, the NLO is, NLO of course we always match so that the exact NLO is included, but we are talking about beyond, and beyond we don't know.
Presumably you're even better at lower energies now, where the PDFs cut things off more.
I can only say what I checked. If you compare Tevatron and LHC for top, you're doing better for LHC. But I think that's mainly
LHC at 7.
Yeah, 214. I don't remember. I had plots I could look at, but I couldn't tell you whether there's. I think there's not such.
7.
At least you know the level, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I have these curves I could show you, but I just don't remember.
How it compares the
result
with the
level. Yeah. We have done this for also the other energies. I just didn't have this.
That could be qualified as a very good approximation.
At NLO, for the gluon-gluon channel, it's very good, close to 90%. But it may be partially accidental because of this structure. Yeah. So for the QQ bar channel, it's not so good.
Tau mass.
You mean electromagnetic? You're talking about QCD corrections, the tau hadronic rates, QED effects. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Haven't thought about it. The question is, how big are higher order electromagnetic effects?
The tau mass is from a threshold scan or from a
ring? Interesting point. Yeah. So time goes on. So I would like to sketch how this factorization comes about, and then the color issue. So let's talk about soft Coulomb factorization. First thing is to get rid of the Hartz subprocess. So imagine you have a diagram like this, where all the extra gluons have to be soft. Then there is a Hartz subprocess that produces the two heavy particles near the partonic kinematic threshold. And so it's rather easy to see that the Hartz subprocess is always the 2-to-2 process. So for instance, TT bar. No extra particles, because if you have extra particles in the subprocess, it's for the external lines. This has to be soft. So if you allow an extra soft particle in the vertex, then you lose from this hard propagator in between. So that immediately costs you, if you count it, a power beta squared. We are not worried about beta squared. We only need to go to order beta here to do NNLL. So right from the start, you can write down your amplitude in the following form. Sum over some production operators with some coefficient functions. And then you need to take the matrix element of a quasi-local operator that accounts for this 2-to-2 process. And so these operators will look like this. They have two part one external lines. So these are fields which in the sketch terminology would be called collinear fields, part one that moves into this direction, and an anti-collinear field for the part one that moves into the opposite direction. And each of those has a color and a spin index. And then we produce a heavy particle and another heavy particle. So we need creation operators. Now these heavy particles must be non-relativistic because there's not much kinetic energy left over. So these are non-relativistic fields, which will be described by a non-relativistic Lagrangian. And so all the hard stuff, where hard means momenta of order m, of the mass of the particles, which is also of order square root s hat. This is in here. And this matrix element has to be computed with an effective field theory that only needs to approximate the process for virtualities and scales much lower than m. And so this effective field theory is then given by soft collinear effective theory, which deals with the interactions of soft things with collinear fields, and non-relativistic effective theory, which deals with the interactions of soft fields with non-relativistic fields. There are no direct interactions between collinear and heavy fields because these immediately create virtualities of order m squared, which would already be integrated out here. So let me write down the relevant parts of this effective Lagrangian. I will write down for sket only the piece of the soft interactions, soft gluons, with, let's say, a collinear quark. There are similar pieces for the anti-collinear quark and then also for the gluons, and the argument always works exactly the same. So this is how the Lagrangian looks like. Higher order terms, which are subleading or involve collinears, gluons, anticollinear quarks, etc. So C means that the covariant derivative contains only the collinear gluon field, and the term which is really important for us here is this one, which contains the soft gluon field, and you recognize very familiar things here, namely the soft gluon always couples to the vector n. That's the essence of the Eichnerl approximation. And then there's a funny thing here. This is the Lagrangian at point x if you insert it into the action integral. And then the soft gluon doesn't sit at x. It sits at a point which is given by x mu is n bar dot x over 2 times n mu. So you drop some of the components of x. Now, dropping components of x in the position space language means that you neglect certain momenta in propagators in momentum space. Yeah. That's what it amounts to. So this is also a feature that you know in the Eichnerl approximation, that you throw away certain terms in the propagator which are of higher order. Yeah. And here it's manifested in this argument of the soft field. And it will be very important later that this argument is precisely this and not x. Now, the non-relativistic Lagrangian looks like this. In fact, there is an issue here which I will skip, but here the soft stuff has energy of order n times beta squared. In the final state interactions here, there is also a relevant region where there is soft stuff with energy n times beta, larger than the external lines. These you can also integrate out, not only the hard stuff. And then what happens is that this second step precisely generates what is in the old-fashioned language called heavy quark potentials, namely instantaneous but non-local interactions. And this is what we have in mind here when we write down the effective Lagrangian for the non-relativistic fields. It's then called potential non-relativistic QCD. And in this case, there is a similar structure. You see the close analogy with the Eichnerl coupling to the soft gluons, except that now instead of a light-like direction, it's a time-like direction that matters. And since I'm working in nearly the rest frame of these particles, it's really just a zero component. And also here, there's an approximation here that you must have x0. Psi, and then you have a similar term for the other fields, psi prime. And then you have an interaction which is non-local, d3r, of psi dagger t in representation r, a psi, so particle psi is in color representation r, at point x plus r, and then particle psi prime is in color representation r prime, and this sits at point x. So you see it's non-local, but only in space. So temporally, this is an instantaneous interaction. And then here we have alpha strong over r. And so here you recognize what you would identify with the Coulomb potential, because this operator simply comes from this graph where you have tr here and tr prime here. And because k0 is much smaller than k, this propagator is 1 over k vector squared. Yeah, and therefore, it doesn't propagate. And that's the reason why it's an instantaneous interaction. And the Fourier transform of this, if you write it as a Lagrangian, is, of course, 1 over r. And that's how the Coulomb potential arises as an operator in the Lagrangian. Oh, this is spin-dependent potentials are higher order effects. Yeah. So, so yeah, there's one important point for B-summation here is that this interaction is leading. You cannot treat it as a perturbation. And that's precisely because if you do this counting as we did here, you have an alpha s, but you get a 1 over beta. So if beta counts like alpha s, then this interaction is unity. And so this means that you cannot work with this thing perturbatively in these exchanges. You have to include this part into the unperturbed Lagrangian. And then you have to work out the propagator for the unperturbed Lagrangian, which includes this interaction. And then it's an interesting matter to show that the propagator of this Lagrangian with these terms is nothing but the green function of the Schrödinger operator with the Coulomb potential. And in this way, you recover sort of the hydrogen atom and bound states from the field theory treatment. But this is a technical step which I cannot discuss here because I want to move to the issue of factorization. diachromatic factorization somehow tells you that you can move soft gluon emissions from a collinear line away to the end where the vertex is. And this well-known fact in soft collinear effective theory is manifested by a field redefinition. So you write for this field, you redefine this field, introduce a new field, psi zero, where this here is a Wilson line. And so this gluon is taken in the representation of the field, so this is R. And then you can use the following property of Wilson lines that this object is given just by the ordinary derivative. So this is a standard identity for Wilson lines. And this means that when you express this Lagrangian in terms of these redefined fields, you get an S dagger from the left and an S from the right. You commute it through, that gives this relation, and it removes this term. Now, for this to work, it's very important that this field depends only on X minus, because then you can choose this Wilson line to depend only on X minus. And because of this, these transverse and the other derivatives don't act on this S, because you dropped the transverse components. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So in this way, what you get is no soft collinear interactions in the leading order Lagrangian. And that's soft collinear factorization as seen from the sketch perspective. And this is well known from the work of Bauer et al. 2001. Yeah, it's a standard procedure to do factorization in sketch. Now, the question is, can we do the same thing for the non-relativistic fields? We want to remove the soft interactions from here as well. So due to the similarity of the structure here, you immediately know what you should do. You should redefine your heavy particle fields with the soft Wilson lines in the representation of the heavy particle. So let's write R. And in this case, clearly you can use then a similar identity. And this eliminates this term here.
This sort of things that you're trying to eliminate, they don't couple with this transverse.
With?
You indicated in your term that you couple with the swing momentum of the heavy particle.
No, no. This is here. We are not taking the gauge where A0 is 0.
Why are we not taking the gauge?
Because I don't want to. I could do it.
If you could do it, then you don't have to do it.
No, you know, it's a bit difficult because if you choose A0 to 0 gauge, it's not so trivial because you cannot choose it naively, because you know that, for instance, if you quantize the theory correctly in A0 gauge, you would get non-local terms, actually the Coulomb potential term. Yeah, sure, that's related. But I don't want to choose a specific gauge, okay? I'm not saying that you cannot do it, but I just want to do it in the general gauge, okay?
If you drop this term in the PNRQST Lagrangian, then in that Lagrangian there's no interaction. You just argued the last line.
Wait a
the
moment.
Last line is part of the unperturbed Lagrangian, and then basically there's
so at this at this point it seems that we have a similar statement like here. There is no interaction between soft and potential fields. But wait a moment. Wait a moment. Not yet done, because it's not. That's the result, but it's not that simple, because when you make this field redefinition, then you get S here. So, and here as well. So what you've done essentially is the following. You have Coulomb interactions, you have these soft interactions from here, from the single line, and by this field redefinition, you moved these interactions to the Coulomb vertex. This is not what you want. You want to remove them entirely. And so, but then you have to realize the following thing. Let's look at this expression. Okay, unfortunately it's down there, so I cannot do it here. But you can use the following identity, which is valid for arbitrary representations. That when you dress a generator from the left and the right with a Wilson line, then this gives the adjoint Wilson line. With this generator. And so you get an adjoint Wilson line from here and another adjoint Wilson line from here. So in total you get two adjoints. AC. Now you transpose this, then you get S transpose S, but the adjoint representation is real, so you get S dagger S, which is unity. So you get delta BC. And so in the end, you just get the generators back with B and C, and these Wilson lines have disappeared. Yeah. And so with this little extra manipulation, it tells you that these things actually, basically, the one down there and the one up here, they cancel each other. Yeah, that's the statement here. So at this point, okay, at this point, we are practically done with factorization, because now we have an effective Lagrangian where the soft gluons don't couple to the collinear fields and the potential fields, so they're basically gone in the Lagrangian. Of course, it doesn't mean that they disappeared entirely, because we also have to do this field redefinition on the operator whose matrix elements we take. So the operator O A alpha will now consist of all these Wilson lines. Yeah, color indices, which I skip. And it will look like this. But no more interactions in the Lagrangian. And so this means that when you now take the matrix element of this operator with, you calculate it with this Lagrangian, but in, and you use the interaction picture, but the Lagrangian is completely factorized in collinear, soft, and Coulomb. And so that means that you can build your Hilbert space of unperturbed space states as a tensor product of purely soft, collinear, etc. states. And so, for instance, this one would be a P in the collinear sector, a P prime in the anti-collinear sector, but it would be the vacuum in the heavy field sector, and it would be the vacuum in the soft sector. And similarly here. And so this operator falls apart into things like this, vacuum phi c p, vacuum phi c bar p prime, h prime, psi dagger, vacuum, and then at the very end you have x, and here all the soft stuff. So this is this matrix element, and now you square it and you integrate it over the entire phase space. So you sum over all x here, and summing over all x, it's the usual trick, inserting a unity and a translation operator to get rid of the e to the I p stuff. And so then the rest gives you essentially the formula which we talked about. So the formula will consist of something like c squared, that was the hard coefficient of this operator. Then from squaring, it will contain something like this, and the same for the anticollinear. These objects, they are just parton distributions of partons in partons, because we are factorizing a partonic cross-section. Then the Coulomb factor will be the square of this. So you see that it will be the imaginary part, the cut of a correlation function of this thing, which generates a phi and a phi prime. And you need to take the imaginary part. And then the square of this, summed over all x, will define the soft function. And so this is essentially the formula I wrote down, and I have to skip a bit of the details here. Now, what does the soft function look like? I will write it down, because next we want to discuss color. So this soft function will contain 8 Wilson lines and a lot of color indices. Depend on that times the same thing conjugated basically. Okay, I will write down this color stuff only once, because it's maybe too much index stuff for a blackboard talk. But you see each of these contains 2 color indices. You can see that here one index on the initial state ones is contracted here with here, and in n bar also. And this comes, of course, because when we define the PDS, we are taking a color average in the initial state. So these 2 are contracted. The rest is all open. And at this point, the rest gets contracted with pieces in the hard production. That's the A's, and this complex conjugate, that's the B's. And the K's get contracted, the K's are on the heavy Wilson lines, they get contracted with the Coulomb function. So at this point, the color structure is still totally mixed up. So, okay. Yeah, let me spend like 10 minutes on color, and then I'll maybe drop some of these pieces to discuss some of the numbers in the end. because I think the color structure is kind of interesting. So, but I will only sketch some of the essential steps here. Some figure, the color, or, okay. Some figure for this. Yeah, so it would be basically look like this. Eight Wilson lines. Here these color indices are the same. Here the color index comes in, so it could be B1, B2, B3, B4, because the hard vertex still has the 4 color indices here. here it would be the same with the A's. And then here we have the K's for the final state. We have some lines because at this point, the Coulomb function may change the color state. So that's how it looks like. And so now I want to sketch the basic steps why the color in the end is entirely trivial and how this basis arises. So let's first look at the hard vertex once more. Remember, we have two partons colliding in representations R and R prime, and two heavy particles in representations R and R prime coming out. And so the indices would be this. So the key idea here is to manage color is to introduce irreducible representations. And you will see why. So we have to take the tensor product and decompose it into irreducibles. And then we do the same for the initial state. So the relevant cases are things like 3 and 3 bar for quark, anti-quark, which is 1 plus 8. We also have 3 tensor 3 for quark-quark collisions, which is 3 bar plus 6 for quark. Gluon collisions, it would be 3 times 8, which is 3 plus 6 bar plus 15. And for gluon collisions, we would have 1 plus 2 eighths. One is symmetric, the other is anti-symmetric, 10 bar, and 27. So this covers the initial state. It also covers the final state for most interesting things, gluons, quarks, squawks, gluinos. So the key objects when you deal with irreducible representations are, of course, the Clebsch-Gordan coefficients, which is a unitary basis transformation from the tensor product space to a block diagonalization. And then to project on an irreducible representation, you really construct the following object, A1, A2, B1, B2, and then you take the Clebsch-Gordan coefficients, and you sum over this index, like this. And then you can show that this forms a complete set of projectors on the irreducible representations. So why is this the right thing to do? There is an intuitive reason. When you produce a pair of heavy particles with very small relative velocity, then after the production they are not spatially separated much. And so a soft gluon only sees this as a basically an elementary object with a total color charge. Total color charge means the irreducible representation. The second thing is, and that's very important, is that going to irreducible representation diagonalizes the PNRQCD Lagrangian in color. In other words, if you have the Coulomb interaction, which was in the lowest order Lagrangian, and you have a state in an irreducible representation coming in, then the same color state will come out. And that is due to an identity which is as follows. If you have the two color matrices here and you act with a projector on this way, then you will get a numerical coefficient times the same projector, which tells you that you stay in the same representation. And this numerical coefficient is precisely the strength of the Coulomb potential in a given irreducible representation, the 4/3 for the singlet and the -1/6 for the octet, and you can work it out for all the other representations as well. So that's why the key thing here is to use this irreducible representation, because then we have basically dealt with the color here, because now this is diagonal in every irreducible representation. So the next thing is to find the right basis for the hard production process. So you take the amplitude for H prime, which has four color indices, so in this multi-index notation. And now you want to decompose this into a basis of color structures. I with amplitudes where the color is stripped off. So this basis should be orthonormal. And the question is, what's the dimension of this basis? And then you can show that the uniquely distinguished orthonormal basis is formed in the following way. You take the Clebsch-Gordan for an irreducible representation in the initial state, an irreducible representation in the final state. You sum in this way. And what is I? I runs over all pairs of equivalent, not identical, equivalent representations in these products. So let me give you an example. If you scatter two gluons into, let's say, two gluinos, then each of these states is decomposed into irreducible representations in this form. So now you can form the following pairs of equivalent representations, one and one, then eight symmetric with eight symmetric. But eight symmetric and eight antisymmetric are not identical but equivalent, so you get this as well. You get the antisymmetric with the symmetric. This one, 10 and 10 bar are complex conjugate to each other but not equivalent, so you only get this, and then there is the 27. And so that gives you eight combinations.
Now in these brackets is initial state, final state?
Or? Yes, this is R alpha, this is R beta. So you take pairs, these.
It is the standard decomposition invariant.
So where does this follow from? Yeah. Why do you have to have equivalent representations? The intuitive argument is clear, it's color conservation of the amplitude. Yeah. That's behind it. It's not the general basis. It's the general basis because we know that these amplitudes satisfy color conservation. So you have this picture. Maybe I should draw it here. So we start by projecting on a particular irreducible representation here. Then this initial state one here was PR beta. And here it was P R beta prime, and then the initial state was R alpha, and here R alpha prime. Because the Coulomb potential is diagonal, these two must be identical. Because of color conservation, these two must be equivalent, not identical. And so immediately you see that these two here must be also equivalent. And this gives you the basis that this allows you to understand why the basis has a certain dimension. For instance, for gluon-gluon to TT bar, which is 3 plus 3 bar, the basis would be three-dimensional because you can have 1-1 and you can have 8 symmetric with the 8. There's only one 8 in 3 and 3 bar. And you can have 8 anti-symmetric together with the 8. So it would be three-dimensional. So now, this tells you that the soft function that you should consider is actually not the one I wrote down here, but because you project it on the irreducible representation and you project the short distance coefficient on color, you will take the following color sums. I prime. Like this. So this is a soft function that you have to consider. And this means for every given R alpha, you have a matrix which has the dimension of the number of these elements. Yeah. So for this case, for every final state representation, you have an 8x8 matrix. Sounds still complicated. But these indices here can only be non-zero if the representations are equivalent. Yeah. So this means, take an example, choose the 27 representation. then the only non-vanishing element is the 2727. So these soft functions essentially are 8x8 matrices, which most of the time have only a single diagonal index. Except if the same representation occurs twice. And this can occur only, so it can be non-diagonal, only for the gluon-gluon initial state, because in this case we have an 8 symmetric and an 8 anti-symmetric. Yeah? So for instance, let's take this example, which is simple. You take R alpha to be the singlet representation. In this case, there can only be this element. That's all. If you take the final state in the octet, then this must be zero, but potentially you can have these four elements from combining 8s and 8. Now the point is that you can use, so now the point is the following, that this is a gluon-gluon initial state, so it has to satisfy Bose symmetry. And then you can show by looking at the color structures that you always get in these off-diagonal elements a D structure with an F structure. And then by applying Bose symmetry, you flip the sign of these structures, because one is anti-symmetric, the other symmetric. And so by this you can show that in all the cases the off-diagonal elements are zero. So you end up always with diagonal matrices. So here you still have two diagonal elements which refer to these initial states, the symmetric gluon, the anti-symmetric. Now, it turns out later that the anomalous dimensions, at least to the order we know them, satisfy Casimir scaling. And because the Casimir is the same, these are identical, so you don't really have to distinguish the symmetric and anti-symmetric. But I'm not sure whether that holds to all orders, because we don't know about Casimir scaling to all orders. So, conclusion for this, these soft functions are all diagonal. You have to sum over irreducible representations. And since, unfortunately, the formula has disappeared, but this explains this second point, that in the end, you take out this single non-vanishing element, or the diagonal ones, and then you can just write the formula in terms of these elements rather than matrices. Okay, I have to hurry up a bit, so let me just summarize this point in words. You have this formula which contains these various pieces. So it was H times J convoluted with a soft function, and this in the end is convoluted with PDFs, and this is the hadronic cross-section. This hadronic cross-section must be scale independent. All these terms have scale dependence, and so there's a consistency condition that the scale dependence has to cancel between those. Now, when we started working on this in 2008-2009, the two-loop anomalous dimension for resummation for heavy particle production wasn't really known. There were some conjectures that maybe it's the same as the massless case, which turns out to be wrong. And so the question is how to get this two-loop anomalous dimension. And then Thomas and Matthias came with this paper where they basically wrote down the formula for the infrared divergences of these amplitudes H here. And you can immediately apply this to this case in the following way. I mean, we have this process, the 2-to-2 process with four legs. So at first sight, it seems that you could have three parton color correlations in this case, at two loops, for instance. But we already know that we can combine this final state particle to a single one in representation R alpha. And technically, if you contract these two Wilson lines with a Clebsch-Gordan coefficient, you get the Wilson line in the representation R alpha. So essentially, the soft function is one of a 2-to-1 process with the two particles merged into one. And for such a process, there can be no three parton correlations. So we can just take the limit of their formula. And this identifies the soft anomalous dimension with the anomalous dimension of a heavy light current, where the heavy particle is in representation R alpha. There is one extra twist here, which is that the formula isn't really valid in the threshold limit, because the limit beta to zero doesn't commute with the limit epsilon to zero. And that is because from the Coulomb interaction in the final state, you generate new ultraviolet divergences in the effective theory. So the anomalous dimension gets corrected by a piece which comes from the non-relativistic Lagrangian, which however starts only at two loops. So in this way you can determine the anomalous dimensions. So you have the renormalization group equations, and you can solve them in very much the same way as Thomas and Matthias and Xu did it for Trajan production, because the structure is really very similar, so the formula. So the resummation formula is very close to Trajan production, and I'll discuss it in a minute. Let me also maybe spend 2 minutes on the next to Eichner discussion. So the effective Lagrangian, which I wrote down, keeps only the leading order soft interactions, both in the collinear sector and in the non-relativistic sector. To get the next to Eichner terms, you have to look at the higher dimensional, in quotes, operators in the effective Lagrangian. And they are all known. And there are three types of interactions, which are of order beta in the non-relativistic sector. They look like this. There's the chromoelectric field. In the collinear sector, there are two interactions. One is very similar. So here you have an interaction with the chromoelectric field, which is a zero I component of the field strength. Here you need to take the transverse component, because it's a light-like thing. And then there's a third interaction, which is this one. So this interaction, for instance, describes the soft emission of a quark. So you have an incoming collinear quark, goes into a soft quark, and a collinear gluon. These splittings we normally never consider for good reason, because they are power suppressed. But they appear in the next to Eichner approximation. This one would be an interaction vertex where you insert x dot e here, and this one would be a similar vertex with x perp here. So now you have to consider these interactions to first order in perturbations, yeah? Because you want to get the O beta terms. So this means that when you have this picture where you have these lines here, you have to allow, you have all the soft emissions from leading order, and you have to allow one soft emission to be one of these vertices, here or here, x dot e. And now you see what happens. These are Wilson lines, and so now in between these Wilson lines, at one point you will insert an extra soft field strength or gluon. So you get more complicated soft functions with insertions of field strength tensors. And that would give a wholeness in the factorization formula. But then you see that here you have x vectors, you have x perps, and when you look at it for some time, you see that by rotational invariance, either in space here or in the transverse plane here, you have no vector to contract this with. Yeah. So it vanishes. Only at second order you could contract this twice, and then you would get something. And this tells you that the corrections come at order beta squared. No next to Eichner terms here. And you can actually verify this in the known next to leading order expression, that the expansion seems to go in beta squared, not beta, and it's related to rotational invariance. So, okay, this was a bit quick, but I have to finish soon. So I want to spend a few words on the numerical result of the resummation. Maybe you want to know how this resummation goes in the end. And so here it is. and else you can ask Thomas as well, but he's leaving. Basically what stands here is the solution of the renormalization group equations. And so from the technical point of view, what you have to do is you have to convolute this Coulomb function with this expression. Then you have to act with a certain derivative operator on this expression. This derivative operator is the Laplace transform of the soft function, where you replace the argument by the derivative operator, and then you multiply some evolution functions which contain things like the Sudakov factor with double logs and so on. So this is how this formula works. If you do Dreyian, then you don't have this convolution, because there was no convolution with Coulomb and this. And of course you have a slightly different soft function and you don't have to sum over color channels, but that's the essential difference. Numerically this turns out to be quite non-trivial, because this integral converges only when eta is larger than zero, where eta is a certain integral of the anomalous dimension. It turns out that we need negative values of eta, so you have to construct the analytic continuation of this object, for instance, by integrating by parts. But then you act with a derivative on this Coulomb function, which contains nasty things like 4F3 hypergeometric functions. And then you get ugly stuff with polylogarithms. You also have to make subtractions in the integral over the parton densities and construct a certain analytic continuation there. But okay, this can be done. And so let me show some results. So first we looked at potentially meaningless things like squawk anti-squawk production, because we thought those we can make as heavy as we want to justify this summation. And so we looked at this only at next to leading log. And so let's do 7 TeV, and let's take the squawk masses to be 600 GeV. So then the cross section at leading order is something like 0.33 picobaud. Next to leading order, which is known exactly for a long time, gives you a 20% extra effect and some reduction of scale dependence. So this is 20%. And the effect of higher order corrections due to resummation turns out to be about another 10%. So not huge, obviously, but also sort of on the scale of NLO. It's this is matched to full NLO. And so we're talking about things that are formally NNLO plus, etc.
How much of the next leading order do you get from just the logarithms?
You mean how much is Coulomb and how much is soft? Ah, yeah, that's an interesting point.
How much of the next leading order do you get if you just use the resummation?
Oh, this, I think about, there's a plot in the paper, it's about 70 to 80%. If you didn't match to full NLO. Oh, but there's an interesting point here. Simultaneously, other papers appeared on NLL resummation, which didn't include the resummation of Coulomb here. And then you get only 3 to 4%. So in this particular channel, the interference in higher orders of soft and Coulomb is really an important effect. That is not the case for TT-bar, which I discuss next. In this case, let me say the Coulomb effect turns out not to be particularly important. In fact, the entire resummation effect seems to be not so relevant. So let's do some numbers for TT bar. Maybe remind you of the experimental results, CDF, from a combination of everything quotes this. D0 quotes this, where I'm not totally sure whether everything is included, but certainly the most precise channels are included, so quite consistent, 7.5 picobaud with an error of slightly below 10% at LHC from 36-35 inverse picoband. Atlas quotes 180 plus minus 18, and CNS has 158 plus minus 19, also compatible within errors. And so in the following, when presenting numbers, you have to choose a value of the top quark mass because it depends quite strongly on it. So we choose 173.3 GeV. We use MSTW for the PDFs with their error, which they provide with the different sets. So then let's do NLO, Cavatron, and LHC. So at NLO, you get this always in picoband. We can only go to the next order, NNLO, and include the terms that we know. That is all the singular terms, but no higher order terms. And this is what we call NNLO approx. And this gives you some enhancement, which is about the order of the error of NLO. Okay, now the errors, this is misleading because here I didn't write the PDF error because I didn't have it. Here we use NNLO PDFs, here we use NLO PDFs. If you used the same PDFs in both cases, then the effect would be bigger, about twice as large, but half of it is compensated by also using the appropriate PDF sets. So this is the usual scale error, so you should compare this to this, and this is what you get extra from the PDF error, computed from MSTW only. And so for LHC, the effect is pretty small. And now when we go to resummation, we include higher orders. You also include one extra piece. Once you resum, you get bound states. So formally, you generate a TT bar bound state, but this you cannot distinguish experimentally because the top doesn't annihilate with the anti-top. It decays, of course, just normal weak interaction. So it gives the same signature. And unless you can measure the invariant mass very precisely, which you cannot, you can see this. So
this is, by the way, totally counterintuitive because the K factor in the Taylor form is 1. Analog
impact, the Teleton is roughly 1, so you're claiming there will be a large NLO. There is roughly 1.4. You're saying that the
first time.
This is NLO approx is very simple. Yeah, you take a bunch of numbers, you integrate. That's what you get.
So boxes NLL expanded to alpha squared.
If you expand NNLL to order alpha squared, you will also generate a constant. This is not included in NNLO approx because this constant is not known. It's only part of the constant. So NNLL gives you a further slight enhancement. And at LHC, it basically gives you nothing. Okay. Now, in the details, how to compute these errors and estimate the ambiguities in this resummation stuff is quite an unpleasant thing to do. And even worse to tell. And so there are, of course, many ambiguities when you do resummation. One we just mentioned, you don't have this constant. Do you include it? Do you subtract it? Now, then we have this problem that in the large beta region, we are not doing a systematic approximation. So what we do is we play with different things which are formally within our accuracy but differ at large beta. We play with this to get an idea of the ambiguity that comes from there. And all that is somehow included. Yeah. But you have to keep in mind for large beta there's guesswork. Yeah. We hope that the pattern repeats itself. So this is then the conclusion. So I would say this is the best we can do at the moment for TT bar production, and as soon as we know the complete NNO, I would say this is partly superseded because it's of course much better to have the exact result at large beta. But even then, you may think about actually including the higher order terms that are in this resummation. They may not be totally negligible.
What variation? What precision in the top mass does it
cover? So now you want to use this to compare with this to determine the top mass. You typically get something on the order of 4 to 5 GeV, which I think is a good thing because, okay, it doesn't have this issue about the jet mass reconstruction and the transfer. Of course, so you have to keep in mind that total cross-section measurements, I mean, total cross-sections are more like pseudo-observables at the LHC, yeah, because they have to reconstruct it, and who knows when you compare this with this stuff, what you lose at this point. So this is another issue that one has to keep in mind, but from the theoretical point of view, this is very clean. You can use the NS bar mass, you can use the top mass, you can play with this, and this is all much better defined than mass determinations from jets.
Thanks very much, Mark.